This is Reset. I'm Jen White. My next guest is a relatively new cast member on Saturday Night Live, but he's already been behind a number of standout segments and characters.
The lady from Sally Mae says your student loan is past due. Rashad.
What is I ain't got it because I died, you talking to a ghost.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, you can't build what's not there, okay? Just ask Wesley Snipes.
Hey, I'm telling y'all, trust me, spend your money, all right? IRS can't take it if it's already spent. Can't take something already gone. That's a tax loophole for your brother.
That's actor and comedian Chris Redd. He's a cast member on Saturday Night Live and got his start right here in Chicago as a member of Second City. That's the launching pad for a whole slew of past SNL members, including Tim Meadows, Tina Fey, and Dan Aykroyd. He's back in town preparing for an event with Chicago Hopes for Kids. It's a local nonprofit advocating and providing educational support for children living in homeless shelters. And Chris Redd joins me now. Welcome to Reset.
Hey, good to be here on Reset.
Now, understand, you weren't born in Chicago, but you consider Chicago home.
I do. I was born in St. Louis until I was about 7 years old, and then I was forced to move because I was a child and I did not have a say. And we came to Chicago, and then we moved out to the suburbs right after that. And so I went to school in the suburbs, and I came out to the city right after I graduated high school.
What was growing up around here like?
Growing up in Naperville sucked. Nice books, a little racism. But it was fine. I learned a lot how to deal with people I don't like, and but I loved the culture of Chicago, even though it felt segregated at times, especially with the talents and like how the different neighborhoods were set up. When I got into comedy, and even when I was doing music, going to different parts of the city, you were exposed to different types of people, and I feel like coming up here really prepared me to travel everywhere and tour and do comedy and be able to like adjust to the energy of the room, not even the material, but figure out how to relate to people from all different types of backgrounds, because we have that here. So.
How do you take that temperature in real time? Is it just listening, or I mean, what's at play?
Yeah, it's like if you say like a joke on religion, you see how people laugh. You can tell a lot by how people laugh and how they just and the air of the room, and then you're like, okay, cool. And some people be like, oh, I'd rather not tell that joke. For me, I'd rather tell the joke to see what I can add or what I can. What I can just dive deeper in to just get the laugh, because everybody wants to laugh at things. It's just about like some people don't feel like they're allowed to laugh at certain things, and once you give them that go ahead, then they do it, and that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to reach the people that were meant for you.
So you're kind of editing in real time, like in real time. It's not like you have an act and you just stick with that act.
Yeah,
you're doing this in real time.
Yeah, it's like you have to have jokes that you write, and like you have to know if they'll work everywhere, and then I improvise too. So I love improv. Shout out to the improv community in Chicago. So one of the best in the world. So I love writing jokes on the spot, and that's a really good way to connect with people too, and really get to know them as an audience member, and then make jokes of that, which is like fun, and it just opens people up. Sometimes you got to open them up, and then they're more willing to hear the things that may be a little bit harder for them to hear at first.
So before you were a comedian, I understand there was a time when you wanted to be a rapper.
Rapper, drug dealer, kingpin. I wanted to be Scarface without the last scene. He dies.
I know.
Spoiler alert, 80 years later.
Wait, did you have a rap name?
Oh, I had so many rap names. The one I ended off on was Chief, which is I still go up by that. It's a double meaning.
Wait, you can't just like slide in as a double meeting and walk away from that.
I could. I can.
Come on, Chris.
You're not going to let me, because this is the reset.
Look, you are correct, sir. What's the double meaning? Just
I was smoking weed, and I also was the leader of the crew. So, Chief.
Okay.
But before that, I had a lot of terrible names. One of my first ones was Spittin' Flames, because I was a huge fan of this rapper, Dragon. Mm-hmm. He was part of the Rough Riders. DMX was the head of this crew. If you don't know who DMX is, he is a dog that became a human being. And and Dragon would talk about fire alive, like, oh, I spit fire. He had all these like fire metaphors, which in hip hop, metaphor and simile are confused. It's really the simile that they're talking about, but they call it a metaphor because somebody messed up and no one corrected it. So anyway, my name was Spitting Flames, and I thought that was cool for a while. Then I realized it wasn't.
Do you remember any of your rhymes?
Ooh, I remember one of my first rhymes. I started writing after I got my first album on the low because my parents were like churchgoers and they did not like hip-hop.
Wait, they didn't know that you were doing this?
Nah, well, they did and they did not like it. My parents did not support this. Like, now, they'll lie and say it. They did. They don't. They did not support me for a long time. Because they were Southern parents. They came from nothing and made something of themselves and moved down. And when I say, hey, I want to take the opportunity that y'all have given me to go rap. And they were like, no, you lost. And so they did not like that at all. And I was adamant about it, man. I was adamant about it. I remember my first rap was about Barney.
Wait, Barney the dinosaur?
Yeah, I was young. I was like 10 or 11. And I was like, because my parents had us reading early, so like I was writing. Now, it was kid rhymes. It's like it was like a battle rap against Barney because he told me to clean up and I ain't ready, and so that was like one of my first rhymes. And then
wait, do you remember it though? Do you remember?
I don't. I did at one point. There's one interview I did like a long time ago. Where I like vividly remembered the lines.
When you were doing that, did you imagine Barney responding, or was it just a one-way rap battle?
In my child mind, it was like Barney was doing his thing with the other kids, like clean up everybody, and I just came through the door like Kool-Aid Man, like nah, fam, how about nah?
So what I'm hearing is that even as a young child, you had a very active inner life.
My imagination's crazy. Like my imagination was very much like half real world, half cartoon. Uh-huh. I feel like that's how it's always been. I've always been a very animated person, and once I got into comedy, I channeled it correctly.
So how did that transition happen for you?
Failure. I failed at being a rapper. And then I had tried so hard for years. Imagine just like this is all you know, all you want to do. I had a tunnel vision about it. And then I was like 22 and I was just like, I'm still broke and I have made little to no money doing this. And I don't know how long I can keep doing this and just feel this bad about it. Even though I was good, I was good at rapping. I just didn't really know myself because I was trying to like block out being funny. Being funny was always there. Comedy was always a part of me. It's just I didn't see it as a viable way to go.
But there have been, I mean, that's interesting to hear you say that, because there have been rappers who infuse humor into their rap. So what was it that made you want to separate that out?
Because I was already living in the suburbs and I was trying to run with my cousins and my homies in the streets. So I had to commute to the hood, which is not gangster. So I had a lot of things playing against my gangster already. So if I was like funny, then it's like, oh, that's another reason why I ain't gangster. He smiles a lot. So I was like, yo, let me take this. So try to take this comedy out of this rap when I really need to be doing the exact opposite. Mm. So I was kind of lost for a little bit. And then I saw a commercial for Second City and I had never really heard of it before. I saw that and I was like, oh, maybe I could go like try some improv and maybe like do some stand up. And I was already like hosting different things because my counselors would be like, yo, you're funny. Because I would skip class and they would tell me to go to class and I would end up being in there for 25 minutes just cracking jokes. And they were like, if you're not going to go to class, can you at least host a variety show? And I was like, yeah, I'll host. And then that's when I started cracking jokes and it started feeling good. And I was like, maybe I should just do this. And so then I did. I took my first class when I was 23, I think, 22 or 23. And then I met some comics and we went out and did some open mics. And that was, now we're here.
Take us back to your first stand-up gig, like the one you really hold in your mind as being like the first time you're on stage in front of a mic.
Oh, it was good. It was like the first one was, it was this, I think it was called 720 Lounge or 720 Lanes or some. It was like a bar that was also like a bowling alley too. Mm-hmm. And they had a dope open mic that everybody did. And I went there for like 4 weeks before even going up because I was just so cripplingly nervous. Cripplingly? I told you I went to school 1 year.
We'll go with it.
I was nervous, man, and I had a lot of anxiety, which I found out I have. Therapy. Whoop, whoop. So I went to this
Okay, I want to hear this story, but yeah. This is something that I am observing about you.
Yeah.
Is that you just slide these little things in from the side.
Yeah, they're called tags. Comedic tags. I'm just tagging. I'm just keeping it light. My therapist says that's deflecting from being vulnerable, but whatever.
So you're at 710 lanes. I think this is in Hyde Park.
So I finally go up and I have this set that I wrote word for word, and I did well. Mm-hmm. I got some laughs, and that was probably the worst thing that could have happened, because then I was like, oh yeah, I'm about to crush comedy. And then for like 2 years, I just bombed every single set, just constant bombing, just painful bombing. And it, you know, but still going back, I was addicted to it. After that first, even after those bombs, I just felt good, because every now and then you would get a laugh and it'd be like, yeah, okay, I'm in the right direction. Then I remember when I first started like getting my little 5 minutes of material together that was like really good. I was like, I got too cocky. Rap, I had leveled my ego, but comedy taught me how to be vulnerable with myself and how to accept my flaws and everything. Mm-hmm. But I still had a little issue with the ego. So as soon as I got my little 5 minutes together, I was like, oh, I'm good. I'm about to go compete in this comedy competition. And it's very funny because I'm doing a show on Sunday and Lil Rel's on the show. And Lil Rel was actually on this panel for this.
He was one of the judges?
Yes, he was one of these judges of this comedy competition I thought I was ready for. And I remember going up there and I wrote my set and I bought this new shirt, but I couldn't afford it, so I got the tag on it, because if I didn't win the money, I was going to take it back. And I remember that's going to be my first joke. And I went out there and I said, yo, I'm Chris Redd, man, and I know I'm gonna win this, because if I don't, I kept the tag on my shirt and I'm gonna take it back right after this. And then somebody was like, take that back. And that's how it started. And I had like 6 more minutes to go. It was the slowest 6 minutes of my life. I think a simulation was built. I'm getting anxious about it now, like I'm not good at comedy, like it wasn't years ago. That's how much it affected me. But it was like, it's something I needed. I think it was Chappelle who said that, like, every comic needs that one bomb that literally changes how you view the art form in general.
How did it change that for you?
It hurt so bad that I was like, nothing could be this worse. Because not only did I bomb hard, but I had invited everyone in my life to this show. So like old pastors, new pastors, aunties, my parents, friends, people who knew me from the rap life, and they were like, "Why you should just stick to rap." It was the worst. You should just stick to rapping, man. I don't know why you trying to switch it up. You know, everybody was just very, very terrified. My parents were already like, didn't want me to rap. And then they were like, comedy. Now, my dad, he was kind of on board with the comedy thing. But my mom's like, another dream? We just get a regular job. Like, I'm tired of this shit.
That's comedian and Saturday Night Live cast member Chris Redd. He's got a one-night comedy showcase this Sunday, January 19th at 8 p.m. at Park West. All proceeds from the event will go to the local nonprofit Chicago Hopes for Kids. They provide academic support for children living in Chicago's homeless shelters. You can find more information and tickets at eventbrite.com. We'll also tweet out a link at WBEZ Reset. I mean, what's interesting is that you chose these paths that are very front-facing, very reliant on people responding to you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you said, but I deal with anxiety.
Yeah.
How does that work together?
I forced myself to get over it, because I throw myself in situations because I didn't want to just succumb to that feeling. Even when I didn't know how to identify what that feeling was, I was just like, I was a promoter, and I mean, nothing made me more anxious than being in a club trying to have conversation with people when everything's going on and I can't focus. You know what I mean? But I just did it anyway, and I was like, let me just get good at the things that scare me. And so I've always been good at just diving in. I mean, I wanted to run with gangsters, and I dove into that head first. Like, let me just do this. And that's always kind of been a part of my nature. I feel like you can't be scared to try. You can't be scared to put your all into it. Otherwise, you won't see the outcome you're looking for. So that's one thing I've always been able to do. I'll be in moments where I've been over time and over these jobs, I've trained myself how to survive in a situation as long as I can. Like, I can be in a club and have, it's not crippling like it was before, but there, I do have a limit where I'm just like, okay, can we just vibe to the music and not talk now? Okay, this is a lot. Everybody's close. Okay, I'm out. You know, but I have trained myself how to do, like going to a job or like waiting tables. Waiting tables really help too. I'm really good at small talk. Like, I can do it almost autopilot. And my friends will point it out. Like, my friends will be like, hey, dog, you ain't want to be in that conversation. Like, I know, man, but.
But it's just like a skill you've mastered at this point.
Exactly. So it's a way, almost a way of protecting myself from getting deep with people I don't want to get deep with. Unlike you, who I'm getting real deep. I mean, you got to learn about my Barney. I ain't brought that up in a long time. Look, you about to have me tell the secrets. I don't want to end this in tears. Okay?
No, I'll try not to make you cry. Well, you've now thrown yourself into this other pressure cooker of an environment in 100%. Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
You became a feature player in 2017. This season, you got promoted to full cast member. Never mind the audition experience.
Yeah.
But when you first step on that stage as a cast member of SNL, what is that like? I mean, walking the same boards as Eddie Murphy and some of the greats.
You're nervous. You don't know how it's going to turn out, especially like that first year. You don't know what's going to happen because there are so many people. I mean, even from the audition, there's so many people who don't get the show that are talented, but like it doesn't work out for them. Or that first year you find out that it's not going to click for you, or for whatever reason it doesn't click, talented or not. So you just don't know where you're going to fit into things. And then after like having conversations with people, I'm really big on like having conversations with people who've been there longer than me and really getting insight and like words of wisdom. And some of the most important things I had learned was that all the people that you loved in that show, do not try to chase the track that they ran, because yours is going to be different. And no matter what the show looks like, no matter how talented you are, it's always going to look different. To be inspired by Eddie Murphy is dope. To want to be Eddie Murphy is an insane thought process to have. That's the type of things that kind of helps you keep grounded. But it's also, I feel grateful. Every time I walked in that hallway, I'm like, man, I get to do this in the same building as this other person did this. But that first year is a whole lot of you walking out and taking the order and walking off scene, and that's it. And I came from a show where I was like one of the stars of the show, and I had lines. And then my first year, I came in there, and I was like, hey, water's cool, huh? Real wet. And then that's like it. And then the rest, and then you're sitting there for 2 hours like, I'm on Saturday Night Live. No one knows, but I am on here.
Well, one of my favorite SNL skits is called That's the Game. And you play a clueless drug dealer, Quan, who he tries to double-cross his partner because he wants to become the boss. He has no idea what he's doing. Let's take a quick listen.
If I was still the king, I'd put a bullet in your damn head.
Yeah, but then after that, who's the guy you would sell the drugs to, and what's his number, and what's a good time to call him?
Career.
I just asked you, who would you call? How much would you charge? How would you sell it? What's his number? And where you get those little plastic baggies you put the drugs in?
That was, it was so specific.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so specific. And the thing I loved about it is that I think everybody has had that moment of being in over their head.
Yeah.
It's like you want to reach for the far thing. You want to reach for that goal. Mm-hmm. And then you get in there, you're like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah, it's like, so what everybody thinks, I want to be this person. I want to be the head. I want to be the top dog. First of all, I love playing characters that are confidently dumb. I love that so much. It's, you know, surprising I don't like the president. Oh, bang. That's the game. Huh? I sold my share of drugs, but I wasn't great at it. Otherwise, I'd still be doing it. So I had those moments in my mind of like, yeah, I'm ready to get into these streets. But like, how y'all measure the weed, though?
So you were channeling some.
Like, I wasn't as, yeah, of course, like, it's like all those characters come from something. Now, who wrote that with me is Streeter Sidell and Mikey Day, and they're brilliant. We've collabed on a bunch of different joints, like this another one, Mr. H, which is about that kid who like is choosing between the streets and education, mm-hmm. and the white savior moment of like, you like, you need to come back to school. And but he's like, yeah, what you gonna say? I'm a genius. But he's like really just a mediocre student.
Brave teacher comes down to the hood to save his gifted student from the streets, right? Well, next I'm gonna hear, Marcus, you got potential.
You do.
Right. And next is like, Marcus, you're smart, right?
You are smart.
And it's like, Marcus, you a genius. Like, Marcus, you a genius.
And it's just like playing with all those, like, I grew up watching those movies, and so I always love to be able to pull from that culture and like and do something that honors that, other things I love the most about like the black movies I was raised around. So
you spent time as a rapper,
yeah.
as a comedian, you've done improv. What set of skills do you think you're really honing or developing during your time on SNL?
Writing, character work, impressions. I didn't really do impressions. I'm not an impressionist. People like hit me on Twitter like I care. Like this is not a perfect impression. I've never claimed to be that. When I find an impression I can do, I'm surprised with everybody else. Like, I was surprised. I was like, oh, this Kanye is pretty good. All right, cool. I got a good TI. I didn't know I could do that until like when you're sitting there and you're thinking of things to do, and somebody comes in and is like, hey, can you do a TI? I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, okay. You know what I'm saying? You find it like, oh, okay, I do got the register. I can do that. Mm-hmm. But for characters, I've always loved doing characters. I've always loved imitating people in my life. I love like the Richard Pryors and the Eddies. Like Eddie's a perfect impressionist, but also like the off characters too. Like I just like characters that are organically made from either your mind or somebody you know, and like I love that way more than impersonating like a political figure, whatever it is. But
well, we have to mention that you're in town for a charity comedy event at Park West this Sunday.
Yeah,
tell us more about the charity and what this is for.
The charity is Chicago Hopes, and they bring education to homeless kids in the shelters, and as well as food. And we're raising money, and all the proceeds goes to Chicago Hopes and those kids. And so I'm very excited to do that. The show is a Chris Red and Friends show. It's a show I've been doing around the country for a little while, mostly in L.A., New York, but now I'm bringing it to Chicago. And I have some of my favorite people in the world, some of my actual best friends on this show.
You mentioned Lil Rel.
Lil Rel's going to be in the building. That's going to be dope. Ego Wodum, who's also a cast member on SNL, and me and her have a duo group that we play called Gang Gang. And it's a improv and rap show, which is very fun. And then we have Jack Knight, who's writing on Big Mouth. And we're also writing a show together. And we'll have Langston Kerman, who's on Insecure. Who else we got? We have Sterling Hayes, who's going to be performing. We have Mother Nature, who's a Chicago-based group. They're going to be performing as well. And I got some other, I think I got a couple other surprises, so we're going
to
see.
Why was it important for you to support this charity in particular?
I love what they do, and also I wanted to find a charity that supported kids that might not have the opportunities that I may have had. And my good friend Lisa Beasley was like, this is the one that we need to attach to this. And you need to connect with more. So I was like, I'm down. I did my research on them, and I'm like, I'm down. I want to do everything I can. So if you have other charities, I mean, if you're hearing this, you have other charities that you want me to support, please hit me up, man. I'm always trying to give back as much as I possibly can.
So before I let you go, I have to ask. We had a rapper Rhapsody on a little while ago.
Yeah. Oh, she's brilliant.
She's brilliant. And she said her parents were also reluctant about her being in music. And she said they thought she made it. Like the moment when they said, okay, you've made it, was when she appeared on a magazine. Yeah. Has that happened for you and your parents?
Man, listen, I moved to L.A., and everybody thought I was rich. And I'm like, that is not how society works. I was living on a couch in a house with roaches. But they thought just because it was L.A. But no one, when I started making money, just any kind of money, because I was just broke for a long time. I was broke till my 30s. So, like, when I started making money, they were like, oh, okay, you started to make it. But SNL is when, like, majority of my family is like, oh, he made it. He's made it.
And do you feel like you've made it at this point?
No, I feel like I feel like I have a great momentum going, and I'm building towards I'm building towards some other goals. Making it to me is like, if you're living off your passions, then you're living a good life. Making it, I think, is just a term that people say, but you never stop working. There's never a point where I'm like, I've made. Like, if you climb a mountain, once you're at the top of the mountain, you've made it to the top. This is an ongoing mountain. This is a mountain that keeps getting bigger. And this just all depends on where you want to, like, what you want to achieve and your goals. So for me, I'm just getting started.
Well, we can't wait to see what you do. That's comedian Chris Redd with Saturday Night Live. His one-night comedy showcase is this Sunday, January 19th at 8 p.m. at Park West. All proceeds of the event will go to the local nonprofit Chicago Hopes for Kids, which provides academic support for children living in Chicago's homeless shelters. You can find more information and tickets at eventbrite.com, and we'll also tweet out a link at WBEZ Reset. Chris, it's been a real pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I love y'all, Chicago. Come on out, man. Let's have a good time.